if you're visiting with us tonight, please come back. This is different. It's unusual. I should tell you, if you are visiting, I'm not Father Alex Farmer. I'm not Father Ted Griswold, our vicar or our curate. I'm just a local talent in to do morning prayer. And it's even the evening, I know. It's a different service. I want you to keep your service booklet handy with you. When we get time for the creed, it's a different creed than we usually use. We do have a closing song that doesn't close the service. And this is just kind of a weird service if you're not used to it. We do morning prayer around here maybe three times a year. You've heard of improvised comedy. This is like improvised liturgy. We kind of make it up as we go along sometimes. But it works for us. It works for us. Well, about 3 weeks ago or so, Father Alex asked me to take morning prayer today. Alex and Ted are up in North Carolina at a conference, I guess you want to call it, convocation, something like that, a get-together of all the clergy from in the United States, from Kenya, Uganda, and Bolivia, all meeting together. That's where they are. That's why I'm here. So he asked me to do that about 3 weeks ago. And then about a week ago, he called me up and said he had a good idea of what my sermon should be on. And he said, now, you don't have to do this now, but I think it's a pretty good idea. Now, if you know Father Alex, if he says, you know, you don't have to do this, well, he means you don't have to do it. And I feel perfectly comfortable. I would feel perfectly comfortable not doing it. But you also know that if he says it's a good idea, it's usually a pretty good idea. It's usually a pretty good idea. And the good idea was that Father Alex and Father Ted want to kind of kick off a series of sermons on the spiritual gifts, discovering and activating spiritual gifts, moving in the power of spiritual gifts. And so he thought, I would be a good person to kick off the series with a good introduction. Now, I have no idea why in the world he would think I would be a good person to kick off this series. I'm about the least spiritual gifts kind of person there is around here. And I thought, why in the world am I the one getting given this job? I had to think about that for about 10 seconds. Because the answer is, Manly, you need to be thinking about spiritual gift stuff. That's why you got the job. Why are you giving this to me? I know this isn't my kind of thing. Well, it should be. So that's why I have the job. And we're starting as here at Servants, a process of spending some time, maybe 3 or 4 weeks or so, thinking about what spiritual gifts are, discovering spiritual gifts, and then trying to figure out how to activate those gifts in some kind of ministry within the body. Not just knowing what they are, but then, what's the next step? What do you do with it? And so in starting off the series on discovering your spiritual gifts, I thought it'd probably be a good idea for me to start off by making your job easier and going ahead and giving you three that I know you already have. I know you already have these because Paul tells us that we already have these in the second lesson for today, in the epistle reading from 2 Timothy. 1 and 2 Timothy, I love these books. They're about the most personal of Paul's writings. He's writing to a friend who he's had a close friendship with for quite a while. Timothy is significantly younger than Paul is. Paul had associated himself with Timothy, taking Timothy as a young man, and he had used Timothy as a messenger to carry messages to churches. Timothy, it turns out, has a gift, you see, for when a church is in problem, having difficulties. When a church is in crisis, then Paul sends Timothy to go put out the fire. He says, you go over there and solve this problem and come back. And Timothy and Paul have this relationship. Well, as you read all through the book of Acts, you see Timothy popping up every once in a while. At this point, Timothy is now a middle-aged man. He's now the bishop of Ephesus. He has oversight over a group of churches in this area. Paul is now a much older man. In fact, this is probably almost certainly the last writing we have from Paul in the New Testament, and as far as we know, the last writing that he had that he wrote. He's aging. He's an old man, and in fact, he says in this book that it's time for him to die. He's coming to the end of his life. But his friend Timothy has a problem, and it's a problem that Timothy has wrestled with off and on throughout Timothy's ministry, and that is sometimes just angelic music breaks out when I start preaching. So I'm used to it. Um, But Timothy has a problem, and this is really good. He's depressed, okay? He's discouraged. And in Timothy's life, this depression, this discouragement is almost a constant battle for him. And Paul, over their friendship, has developed ways of trying to encourage Timothy. But now we're at a time where Timothy is discouraged. And Paul himself is fighting his own battle. He's at the end of his life. And it's interesting to take a look at Paul's life. As a middle-aged man, you see, Paul writes, "For me to live is Christ, but to die is gain. For me to live is to experience Christ in this life, but for me to die is to be with Christ in the present. So either way, I win. Come on, death, what can you do to me? What kind of sting do you have, death?" But now Paul's an old man. And in this very epistle, 2 Timothy, Paul says, you know, they're going to execute me. They're going to sacrifice me. But you know what? You know, I ran a pretty good race. And I fought a pretty good fight. And I kept my faith. And that's a lot different from that more youthful bravado. Not that Paul changes his mind about death, but that's a different kind of emotion there. But in the middle of this battle, you see, Paul has one more thing to do, and that is to try to encourage his friend Timothy. It's, as far as we know, the last gift he has to offer Timothy. He says, Timothy, you're up against this discouragement one more time. You're up against this depression one more time. What can I do to help you? One more time, for the last time. And Paul in this passage encourages Paul in three ways. First of all, he reminds Timothy of their friendship, of their relationship. In verse 4, or let's start in verse 3 of the 2 Timothy passage towards the middle of the blue sheet. Verse 3, "I thank God, whom I serve as my forefathers did, with a clear conscience, as night and day I constantly remember you in my prayers. Recalling your tears, I long to see you so that I may be filled with joy." He encourages Timothy by reminding them of their friendship, their relationship. He encourages Timothy by reminding Timothy of Timothy's heritage. In the very next verse, "I've been reminded of your sincere faith, which first lived in your grandmother Lois, and in your mother Eunice, and I'm persuaded now lives in you also." Later on in this epistle, once more, Paul is going to bring up Timothy's heritage and say, "Don't you remember your grandmother and your mother? They had this kind of faith too. Look at their lives. Look at their experiences. Look at their lives as an example as you face this discouragement." And then Paul encourages Timothy by reminding Timothy of Timothy's gifts. In the very next verse, verse 6, "For this reason, I remind you to fan into flame the gift of God, which is in you through the laying on of my hands." Paul says to Timothy, you have this gift. Anytime we think of a gift, we're reminded of a giver. God's given Timothy gifts. Some gifts, like we see here, are given by the laying on of hands. Some aren't. What's the difference? Well, I'm sure either Father Alex or Father Ted will get to that sometime over the next few weeks. But ultimately, these gifts come from God. That's what the apostles realized in the first line of the gospel reading, just flipping down for a second. The apostles said to the Lord, increase our faith. The apostles at least realized where faith comes from. All too often as Christians, you see, we think that faith is something we've got to cook up ourselves, that we've got to come up with. But Paul teaches elsewhere in the book of Ephesians that even our own faith is a gift from God. For by grace are you saved through faith, and that faith is not of yourselves, it's a gift of God. And Paul says that God gives each of us gifts. If we're believers, then He's given us gifts. In Romans 12, in 1 Peter 4, over and over again, Paul says each member of the body has been given a gift. Everyone has been given gifts. And here Paul says what to do with that gift is to fan it into flames, to rekindle it, to stir it up, to take those old coals that are just barely hanging on, to rekindle them, to fan the flames, to get them on fire. You have the gifts. How do you activate them? How do you activate these gifts? How do you take your gift, which is just a little bitty piece of coal that might just be about to go out, maybe, just from human stance looking at it. How do you take that, fan it into a flame? Well, I'm sure Father Alex or Father Ted will get to that in one of the sermons in the series. But Paul tells us about gifts. And he tells us about one gift that God does not give, and that is a spirit of timidity, a spirit of fear, a spirit of cowardice. In verse 7 in the Timothy passage, "For God did not give us a spirit of timidity, a spirit of cowardice, a spirit of fear." All of us have spiritual gifts. I mean, God says so. And yet oftentimes we're afraid to act on those gifts for a variety of reasons. We may be new to the Christian walk. We may be new to thinking about spiritual gifts. We may be afraid to use them because, we never have used them before. And doing something new, well, that's kind of scary. That's understandable. That fear is certainly understandable. I can just tell you it didn't come from God. It didn't come from God. Is it real? Yeah, it's real, but it didn't come from God. There's also a fear of pride. A fear that if you see something that needs to be done in the church, and if you step forward and say, you know what, this needs to be done, and you know what, I can do it, other people will look at you bad. Will say, what are you trying to do? Muscle in on somebody else's job here? Who are you to just step up and say, you know, that needs to be done, I can do that. But you see, the way the church works in the community, when the members of the body have the gifts, then the rest of the body recognizes those gifts. And through some kind of process, depending on what those gifts are, you're in some kind of discipleship program with somebody who's helping you utilize those gifts, or you're just given free rein and said, go and do this. And the gifts are tried out and experimented with and not to be afraid of. Is there a fear of possibly being seen as being prideful? Well, yeah, but that fear didn't come from God. Or a fear of extra responsibility. This one's easy to understand, too. A fear of taking on more work. But that fear doesn't come from God. Or maybe a fear of failure. Maybe if I go out and try to do this, then I'll fail. Well, that's certainly a legitimate fear. We all have a fear of failure. But that fear doesn't come from God. Instead, God gives each Christian three other gifts here. Back to verse 7. "For God did not give us a spirit of timidity, of fear, of cowardice, but He gave us a spirit of power, of love, and of self-discipline." A spirit of power, the ability to act, to walk into a situation with authority, and to have the power to deal with that situation authoritatively under the power of God. And how do we activate that spiritual power that Paul says every Christian has? Well, I'm sure Alex or Ted will get to that later too. Our second gift, the spirit of love. Now, we don't have to read too much of the Bible before we realize that God loves us. That one's pretty easy. But notice here, this isn't that. Paul isn't saying that God gives every believer love, but He gives every believer a spirit of love. And that's the hard part. The easy part is getting the love. The hard part is passing on that love, transferring that love. It's easy, you see, to be the pot out in the yard waiting for it to be filled up with God's love. It's another thing to be the pipeline that carries God's love to other people. On the back porch of our house, we've got a system set up to catch rainwater to use for gardening. And we've got a homemade gutter system that runs across the back porch, and then it dumps water into this great big plastic thing of some sort. Big plastic container. You want to call it a cistern, but that's just too fancy. It's just an old plastic thing. Okay? But it's back behind the house. Nobody can see it. Okay? And we live out in the country anyway where nobody can see it anyway. But it's back behind the house. And it's easy, you see, to be the big plastic thing that the love just pours off the roof and runs down the gutter and just pours into, and oh, God loves me so much. It's another thing, though, to be that gutter hanging there on the thin wire, carrying the love to other people. You see, that's the hard part. But God gives us that gift. God gives us that gift. And how do we activate that power of love? To carry love to other people? Imagine Alex and Ted will get to that one too. That Paul says, what do you do with that gift? You fan it into flames. How do you do that? Well, I'm having fun with you. But this is going to take 2 or 3 weeks to work through, right? How do you activate that power of love? To carry love to other people? Well, that's kind of a big question. Or the third gift here. God did not give us a spirit of timidity or fear, but a spirit of power, of love, and of self-discipline. Self-discipline, self-control. The Greek word here literally means, it's kind of interesting, it means a healthy mind or a sound mind. He's given us a gift of a healthy mind. But that phrase gets used to mean that you have a mind, you have a brain, you have a mind that when you see a problem, or you see a situation, you know how to control your personality to match that situation. You know what to do, in other words. You have control of yourself. And how do you activate this power? Well, I'm not going to pass this one off. I have some things to say about this one. Particularly as it involves spiritual gifts. This spiritual gift itself is self-control as we apply it to our spiritual gifts. And that is having that sound mind, that healthy mind, and being able to know when to say yes and when to say no. When to say yes to ministry in the church and when to say no to ministry in the church. In my experience, I meet very few Christians who are exactly perfectly balanced in terms of their ministry, in terms of their service to the Lord. In my experience, Christians are either over-involved or they're under-involved. They're either doing way, way, way too much or doing, to be honest with you, way, way, way too little. It's either way too much or way too little. When I was a kid, I wanted to join the circus for about a week and a half. But in that week and a half, I decided that if I wanted to join the circus, I had to have something to do, so I decided I'd become a juggler. And I taught myself how to juggle. I can juggle three things. I can juggle three tennis balls, three apples, three golf balls. I can juggle three things. You know what? I can't juggle two things. I can juggle three things. That pattern I got. Juggling two things, I can't juggle two things. And I can't juggle four things. Because that pattern's just too smart for me. I can't figure that one out. But I can juggle three things. I can't juggle two things. I can't juggle four things. But I can juggle three things. And you know what happens when you try to juggle more than one thing, or more than you can juggle? You end up dropping balls on the floor. And you end up walking around trying to kick the balls up, get them going while you're keeping the balls up in the air. Well, that doesn't look very, very comfortable when you're watching somebody doing that, and it doesn't look very comfortable in the church either. When people are over-involved, trying to juggle too much stuff, and kicking around some of the balls on the ground in desperation, well, that's not a very pretty picture. So being over-involved is a danger. It certainly is. But so is also being under-involved. And for a variety of reasons, oftentimes Christians find themselves not as involved as they should be, not ministering as much as they should be, for a variety of reasons. For one, oftentimes Christians get a case of false humility, which is just as annoying to God, I'm sure it is, as it is to the rest of us. This sense of false humility. And maybe you know the attitude I'm talking about. I don't have any spiritual gifts. I'm not that kind of person. Everybody else has spiritual gifts, but surely someone who's as miserable a sinner as I could not possibly have any spiritual gifts. That kind of false humility, that's as repugnant to God as it is to the rest of us. So cut it out. How arrogant to think that you alone have enough wisdom to discern that you don't have any spiritual gifts, that everybody else does, but that you're so wise, that you know that you don't. when Paul very clearly has given you three here: power, love, self-control. Or there's another reason why oftentimes Christians are underinvolved and don't use their gifts, and that is they don't know how to do it within the context of the body. After the sermon this morning, Deborah Fairbanks gave me this image, and I liked it, and I told her I was going to steal it and use it tonight. So this is Deborah's image, all right? But she says maybe the problem for a lot of Christians is like they go to the orchestra, and they know what their gift is. They know how to play their instrument, but they don't know how to play in the orchestra with the rest of the musicians to play the musical piece, to play the concert. You need to have the conductor. You have to have a concert master. You have to have all these people who are getting things organized. You've got to have some kind of way of being shown. How do you perform? And I'm not much of a musician, but I imagine that if, for a big orchestra, if all the musicians showed up and they knew how to play their instrument just fine, and all at once just started playing the music, I think it'd be a big mess. Is that okay? I was right. I think it would probably be a big mess. And so maybe part of the solution to this underinvolvement is to think about, well, once you know what your gifts are, well, then how do you exercise them in the context of the body of Christ? And maybe we need to do some hard work thinking about that around here. Well, how do we do that? How do we figure out what spiritual gifts are and then organize everything so that we have this functioning orchestra instead of a bunch of noise? And then there's another reason why oftentimes Christians are underinvolved and not using their spiritual gifts, and that's simply because they don't know what they are. And they simply don't know what they are. And now if you don't know, you don't know. That's all. I mean, being ignorant is a bad thing, but it's not terrible. If you don't know, you don't know. And if you're sitting here and you say, well, this guy keeps telling me I've got these spiritual gifts, I don't know what they are, well, you just don't know. If you don't know, you don't know. Got a box. Do you feel the tension level in the room go up? Father Alex never brings out a box. What's this guy going to do with the box? What's in the box? Some pins. Some more pins. And that's your clue as to what else is in the box. Some paper. And that's all that's in the box. So you feel the tension level just go down dramatically. Now the box is empty. What we have here and what the ushers are going to be giving you in just a few minutes is a little worksheet. It's not perfect. We didn't come up with it here. We borrowed it from someone else. But it's a useful thing to get started, thinking about what my spiritual gifts might be. It's a little spiritual gift worksheet. Maybe some of you have filled these out before. Maybe some of you haven't. What we're going to do is I'm going to have the ushers hand out these sheets to you. You have a list of... I'm going to show this to you. You have a list of statements here. One sentence apiece. You read those sentences and you have some categories: much, some, little, none. And then by the time you work through here, you've got some idea of working towards, you know, what your spiritual gifts might be. It's not official. You don't get a certificate or anything, but it's a starting point. It's a starting point, right? A starting point for thinking, what might some of my gifts be? So while we are doing that, our musicians are going to provide some musical entertainment. Okay, thank you for filling those out. I know that's a bit unusual and different, but then the whole service is unusual and different, so what's the big deal?